I'll get to the campus protest in a moment. I want to start with your reaction to the refugee and immigration bans from the Trump administration. And I want to understand how specifically they impact UC Berkeley or could impact UC Berkeley since they're on hold right now.
Well, I was a co-signatory with 47 other university and college presidents requesting that President Trump withdraw the executive order as soon as possible. We think it's ill-advised for many different reasons. You know, from a personal point of view, I consider American immigration policy to be one in which we are committed to welcoming refugees from war-torn areas, and I believe in that very, very strongly. But from the point of view of UC Berkeley and my role as chancellor, we are concerned that this is going to be a really serious impediment to the kind of free exchange of students, scholars, researchers, and the kinds of exchanges that lead to the vital role that American universities have played in producing the very best university work, the very best in research. In terms of how this has impacted us, we don't actually have a complete inventory of all the students who would be, or faculty who would be impacted, but we know that it's preponderantly students and faculty of Iranian origin. Who make up a very large percentage of our immigrants from and H-1 visa holders and green card holders from that part of the world.
Now to the protests. I know you sent a very impassioned letter to the campus before the scheduled speech of Milo Yiannopoulos. Who, in your view, is responsible for that, for the inability of that speech to go off as planned?
Well, it's very clear to us that on this occasion, there was a group came in from the outside. They were wearing dark colored, if not uniforms, certainly clothing. They had often hats and when they came to campus, masks to obscure their identity. And they seemed to be carrying a variety of weapons. They were launching M-80s from some kind of projectile device, and the chief here, a slingshot, well, there you go. They were throwing some Molotov cocktails, and they were very organized. And they came in and presented a threat to both the event and to the people who were lawfully assembled on Strapao Plaza and to the people inside our student union of a kind and nature that we have not seen before. So we're very clear that that is what caused and led to the cancellation of the event. This is Berkeley, and we have protests, and we encourage protests, and we encourage lawful assembly, and we encourage the expression of all opinions and views, irrespective of the political positions that people hold. And we were expecting there would be large crowds, and we knew there would be people coming to protest Milo's appearance, but we had absolutely no idea that the event would be disrupted by, effectively, by an armed and highly trained group that was committed to closing the event down.
This is a question for both you and Chief Bennett. Do you think the university bears any responsibility for not doing enough to enable this speech to happen? Meaning, the Black Bloc group, for example, is not a new part of the Bay Area. They are definitely a fixture at several protests. You knew for weeks that Milo Yiannopoulos was coming. Protests had been following him at campuses across the country, and particularly here on the West Coast. There was even a shooting at one of them. And so do you feel like the university really did enough, given what you probably knew ahead of time before his arrival?
We had tracked the previous appearances at Davis and the University of Washington. I'd been in touch with both Chancellor Hexter and with President Cauce at the University of Washington. The Black Bloc weren't there. They had, of course, some violent protests in Seattle. At least they had the discharge of a weapon. We had done everything we could do. I mean, we are a university. We're not the National Guard, but had done everything we could do to prepare for the kinds of things we expected. But I'll ask the Chief of Police.
Sure. When you're talking about that the Black Bloc is not unknown in this area, you have to realize that they have not yet been making their presence at a university setting. This was new for us. It's not that protests are new for us. Certainly we've had very large, very raucous, very impassioned protests on this campus. But this was the first time that we had a presence like the Black Bloc come into our campus with the intent of creating destruction. And we had no idea they were coming. We had no intelligence that they were coming. We certainly did prepare for what we thought, as the chancellor said, was going to be a protest that was anchored in free speech. And that is indeed what we saw at the beginning of it. Once Milo was inside, there was the protest group on the outside. There was intense discord going on, which is exactly what we were expecting and exactly what we were staffed for. It was the immediate onslaught of Black Bloc that overwhelmed us at that time. And if you're looking in hindsight, and even if you know you're playing Monday morning quarterback with it, we had no idea they were going to be here. They had never shown themselves on our campus before. This is a new twist in protest management for us that we will be thinking about as we move forward, because every time we have a protest situation, we sit down and say, what can we do better? How do we learn from this one? And this one was a real interesting and unusual set of events that occurred on our campus.
Chief Bennett, it sounds like you're saying you weren't equipped to handle the situation.
No, that's not it at all. We were equipped. We have a highly trained special response team directly put together directly as a result of the Robinson-Edley report that talked about having trained individuals that can handle crowd control matters. The fact is that, I mean, we had nine of our 10 campuses sent officers to us.
But yet you were caught off guard by the Black Bloc, so
we were outnumbered when the Black Bloc came on, because we were not anticipating 100 to 150 armed, well-trained individuals who were going to be throwing projectiles and explosives and Molotov cocktails and using our barricades to ram through the windows and the walls of the buildings.
Help us understand the strategy then, not to go in, you know, with mass arrests and with a more aggressive response, which some would say this situation warranted.
Well, certainly the situation did warrant that, but the way these situations unfold, when you find that you're in a situation where the police department's overwhelmed with their resources, there's a mechanism in the state of California that's the Office of Emergency Services where we could call mutual aid, which we did. We called Alameda County Sheriff's Office, and they were sending mutual aid officers to us. In the meantime, our officers were at the building, protecting the building, and going out into the crowd to rescue those people that they could get to. I just want to say this further. We knew that if we went out into the crowd with the intent of making these mass arrests, it would have escalated the violence that was out there. And people would have really, really gotten hurt, seriously hurt. And the best thing for us to do at that moment while we were waiting for mutual aid to show up is to exercise the restraint that we exercised and to act on those things that we could act on.
Chancellor Dirks, you've called this Black Bloc group outsiders, but there are organizers with groups like By Any Means Necessary that say the masked Black Bloc included several, if not many, students. So how do you know that there were no students who were part of the more militant action?
Well, at the moment, we actually don't know who those masked individuals were, and we are trying to investigate to the extent that we can the identities of those individuals. But it was clear to us that this was a group that had never appeared on campus before. They were entirely different in their tactics than students and others, including the group By Any Means Necessary, that have traditionally protested different kinds of things on our campus. To the extent that we've been able to secure anecdotal information about this, we believe that they were outsiders. Now, maybe there were some members of the community who were part of that. We will try to find out, and we are looking into it at the present time.
And when you say looking into it, there are reports that you're reviewing video, trying to see if you can identify any of those people for arrests. Is that true?
We are. We have collected a good amount of video from the evening, and we are working with our fellow law enforcement agencies to review that video and see if we can identify any of those individuals. Again, it's going to be hard because they were masked up. But we do know that there were fights going on in the crowd that we're going to be watching video on that. And we're going to be working with our counterparts around the county and in San Francisco Bay Area to get some more information.
Milo Yiannopoulos, you want to add to that?
Well, I would just like to reiterate the extent to which we really went out of our way to protect and preserve our commitment to freedom of expression and freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. There were clearly many people on campus who were pressing to have us cancel the event well ahead of time. We made clear to students, we made clear to faculty. I met with countless groups of different members of our community to talk with them about their concerns, that while we understood fully that they had legitimate concerns about the kind of, as it were, commentary and performance that Milo has given on other campuses, that nevertheless, our iconic commitment here at Berkeley to freedom of speech and freedom of expression would be observed in this instance, as indeed in others, since, of course, the whole point of the principle of free speech is that you may not like one speaker, but when you have a speaker who is speaking for you or in a way that you find important as a voice to be heard, you want to make sure they can come and speak too.
Do you think this incident has tarnished the university's reputation as a bastion of free speech, especially given the fact that the university was specifically targeted by the president, for example, in response to the violence that ensued on campus?
I don't think we've been tarnished at all. In fact, I have been hearing from people across the country that we have indeed honored our tradition and that we have been exemplary in terms of our commitment to freedom of speech.
Though that message might not be what's getting out in the mainstream, it's being used as a tool, in fact, to attack the left for being intolerant of, for claims of being intolerant towards free speech that they don't like, hate speech that they don't like.
Of course. That is the nature of social media today. And there are lots of representations of what happened here that I think are being driven by political agendas that have no particular regard for the evidence that is part of this or any of the facts and truth that surrounds it.
What is your reaction to President Trump's tweet following the protests and the violence? I'm sure you know it, but his tweet was, if UC Berkeley does not allow free speech and practices violence on innocent people with a different point of view, no federal funds.
It seems to have been ill-informed.
And what do you mean by that?
I mean that it's fairly well established that some of the tweets that come out of the White House these days are based on things seen on certain kinds of news sources, whether television or perhaps even Breitbart. And I don't think the real news got out.
But do you just ignore a tweet like that? Or do you start implementing any policies or trying to protect your funding, which reportedly half of your research funding comes from federal sources like the National Institutes of Health?
We have I wrote a letter to the New York Times that was published on Saturday to correct the record, and I think that will make clear that we did nothing here to in any way deserve the charge that we didn't do everything within our power to protect free speech. Of course, we are working with various agencies in Washington to continue to press for greater funding for the very important research that goes on here. And we're hopeful that that Washington will continue to see that universities are, in fact, the greatest strength in terms of for our economy, for our culture, for our polity, in their support of the innovative and path-breaking research that universities like Berkeley conduct.
Needless to say, though, if for some reason this ended up happening and the federal government cut funding to the university, it would be a big hit.
Of course, we for ever since the Vannevar Bush report in 1945, which led to the creation of the National Science Foundation, the federal government has been a great supporter of research across universities, and we will be very hopeful that that will continue in the current administration.
Milo Yiannopoulos said on Facebook that he plans to return to the university, hopefully in a few months. I'm wondering, Chief Bennett, actually, what sort of security measures you plan to put in place next time?
Well, we have to see if the invitation does go out and he indeed does visit us. I mean, so let's take that as as a given that he's coming back. There are things that the administration, you know, working together, needs to think about when it comes to venue, when it comes to, you know, time of day, what day of the week. I mean, how can we better control what we expect? I mean, we still very much are committed to free speech. We, at the very beginning, were saying one of our goals on Wednesday night was that this event would be successful. We wanted this event to go through. And everything we planned was to protect that event and to let Milo's speech go through, but also allow the public discord to come as well. That's what we're going to want to do again. We are going to want to have the free speech of both sides of this issue to come forward and have a successful event on the campus. And we will staff it and work it in a way that has that goal in mind.
Will you make a more aggressive response to militant or violent actions like throwing police barricades into windows and smashing windows, Molotov cocktails, setting things on fire?
To start with, I don't specifically talk about police tactics. I'm not going to do that. But I will say that that's a conversation that we have to have with our administration as we're moving into another event.
Meaning the university administration? Mm-hmm.
Chancellor Dirks and our protest response team, which guides the process of protests occurring on the campus.
Could you respond to criticism from the city, from the union that represents campus police, saying that there wasn't early enough communication with the city or the necessary coordination that needed to happen with BPD?
Let me begin by saying that I've been in regular touch with the mayor of Berkeley, Jesse Arakin. I had breakfast with him actually Wednesday morning. We talked extensively about what the event meant in terms of our commitment to free speech and what it might mean in terms of collaboration between the Berkeley Police Department and the University of California Police Department here at Berkeley. So I think there was ample communication and exchange back and forth. Perhaps Chief Bennett can say more.
Weeks before this, when we first learned that Milo was coming to the campus, we notified Berkeley Police Department. I personally spoke with their chief even the night before, and the stance that they took is one that I understand. You know, when you get overwhelmed like that, life safety is the most important thing. And I think the city of Berkeley certainly took the stance that property can be replaced. People can't, right? And for us, it's the $100,000 that it costs to fix the things that were broken can be replaced. It's the people that we sought not to embolden the protesters and to make the situation more violent. And when we moved them off the campus, we stayed on our campus because we were concerned they were going to come back, which they did do. They circled around and came back up through the campus, so we were prepared at that point to move them off the campus again.
$100,000 isn't a drop in the bucket, though, and with the university facing a structural deficit, what impact could this cost have on the university, if any?
We deeply regret the fact that we have to spend this kind of money, but we neither anticipated this level of destruction, nor could we do anything other than condemn it, both because it disrupted an event on campus that we were committed to holding, and because it cost us a very large sum of money at a time when we don't have that kind of money to throw around. That being said, human life is more precious.
Forgive me, and I understand why you're defending the university's response to this, the campus police department's response to this, but are you saying that you aren't making significant changes for the next time Milo Yiannopoulos shows up here? I mean, what are the substantive changes that you're actually planning to make so that the incident that occurred on Wednesday doesn't happen again?
Right, so what you're asking me to do is to say, tactically, what will we do differently?
Not necessarily.
Our staffing may be different. The location may be different, which is going to change our approach totally. So we're not far enough along in this next visit to have a solid grasp of what we will do differently. Will we do things differently? Yes, because we learn every time we go out there, and we have a different set of events occurring on our campus. Can I tell you what we're going to do differently? No. I mean, I'm sure it's going to deal with staffing, location, time, those sorts of things, but it's too early in this next visit for us to be able to say.
Did you make any mistakes, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
I don't think so. I mean, certainly we can be criticized for a lot of things, but I don't think that we called mutual aid too early or too late. We called them once an event occurred that was out of our control. I don't think that our decision to not engage on a fisticuffs level was the wrong thing. I don't believe it was the wrong thing, because had we gone out there, two things would have happened. The Black Bloc group would have gotten energized by our presence out there. And number two, they would have turned around and started attacking our police, which means our use of force would have escalated. I believe we made the right decision.
Well, thank you, Chancellor Dirks. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Chief Bennett, as well.
Thank you.